This is episode 101 of Game Journal. We're going to be talking about 2017's Prey by Arkane Studios. And to see where the game is today, and hopefully where it's going, we kind of need to take a look back at where this game has been and how this IP has developed throughout the years. Talk about where Prey came from, we have to go back to the mid-90s, which is a really interesting time in game development. Id Software was huge, 3D Realms was big, and 3D Realms is actually the owner of the Prey IP at this time. And they subcontracted the work out to a studio called Human Head to develop their idea for a futuristic sci-fi shooter called Prey. Which was a really interesting idea at the time, involving the portal technology, which had always existed in any incantation of Prey, and which was a really revolutionary idea at the time. The game went through a little bit of development hell, much like Duke Nukem Forever. The only difference is when Prey actually did come out in 2006, it was well received by critics and fans. It sold really well. It reviewed well. It was just a really polished experience. There was a few things about Prey that stood out, though, and still stand out to this day. It centered around Native American traditions and culture, which is something I really haven't seen in a game before. And actually, you know, they don't spend a ton of time on it. It does bore down at its base to a shooter with some portal technology and futuristic type weapons, but there is an undercurrent of Native American lore and culture, and the game has quite possibly one of the coolest openings for a video game that I've ever played. I remember this opening more than I do just about any other video game opening, maybe the original BioShock or something like that, but Prey really stands out for me, and it stands out for a few reasons. One was, at the time, the 360 was very early in its life cycle. It didn't have a lot of games, which is, you know, true for most new consoles. And so this would be the summer of 2006 when there just wasn't a lot else on the system. There was something else that was unique to the 360. From my viewpoint, PC players had access to demos, and there had been demos and things on, like, official Xbox magazine would publish a copy of a demo disc that you could play. But for me at that time, I hadn't really played a lot of demos or had access to a console where you could actually download demos before you played them. And I remember downloading Prey. I remember downloading Prey and BioShock. I remember those being the two demos that I really latched onto that kind of changed, you know, how I viewed video games at the time. And Prey stood out to me for its just inventiveness. I had never seen anything like that in my life. And the game starts out, you're on a reservation, and I'm not gonna spend a ton of time talking about the original Prey, because, you know, obviously this is about the new version of Prey, but I think we need to talk about just how different these games are and where some of the ideas in this franchise have gone, where they've turned up. And the game that we have today is completely different in every way to 2006's Prey. And maybe I can shed a little bit more light on that. So you start out on an Indian reservation. Your name is Tommy. You're some type of mechanic, although I'm not sure it really ever goes into that. You are carrying a wrench around with you everywhere for some reason. So I'm assuming he does some type of work that would require a wrench. But he's on the Native American reservation. He has no desire to be there. He doesn't give a shit about Native American culture or legends or mythology. He just doesn't care. It doesn't interest him in the slightest. And his grandfather's at the bar where this game opens, and he's talking about destiny and that kind of thing. And Tommy just doesn't care. He doesn't want to hear it. He don't want to hear anything about it. The only thing Tommy wants to do is get his girlfriend off the reservation for a few days. It doesn't even sound like he wants to escape forever. He just wants a vacation, it sounds like, which they can't even do that for some reason. Anyway, the opening of the game is very unique because the developers spent a lot of time creating this cross-section of game, which is really only seen in the opening and never again. And what I mean by that is there are arcade machines, there's a jukebox, there's a TV, all kinds of things you can interact with in this bar area that, you know, a lot of detail went into this into the setup of this scene, and it really shows. You know, long story short, you cut to Tommy kind of interacting with customers in the bar and his girlfriend and his grandfather. Anyway, long story short, you know, the aliens come down and they suck everybody up in this really kind of grand sequence. And it was really cool. And I remember this specifically. I remember being sucked up on rails into the spaceship. You're on this like almost like a roller coaster type rail system. And you look down and you see planet Earth. And I still sticks with me. Actually, when I was getting ready to record this, I went and looked, I YouTubed it because I hadn't seen it in a while. And it's still really good. It's still really powerful. But yeah, so you're looking down at the Earth, and it's a really interesting scene. It definitely is something that I had never seen in a game before. And so anyway, long story short, not to get too deep into what that game did, and shortly after that, it's still, you know, dives into the Native American stuff. There's a really cool mechanic when you die, how you go into the spirit world, and to bring your, you know, your body back, you have to interact with these Native American traditions to get back into the game. But basically, the main draw of the game itself was the Portal technology, which this game came out a year before Portal came out. So it did what Portal did before Portal did. Although Portal, of course, did it better. But this was still really cool. It was not gimmicky like you would think. It was definitely really cool. The Portal technology worked. It was fun. You could shoot through the portals. You could see through the portals. You drop out on the other side. It made for some really, you know, interesting combat encounters in the first, you know, 2 or 3 hours. And then kind of wears its welcome out. And you, by the end of it, I was kind of ready for this to be over with. Although I will say I greatly enjoyed the game. It was really, really good. I had a really good time with it. And I was excited. I assumed a sequel would be on the way, especially after hearing that it, you know, had sold, you know, over 1 million units, which is, at that time, a game like Prey, the development budget wouldn't have been near as high as, you know, a game, for instance, in 2017. And so it sold well enough to warrant a sequel. And they did announce a sequel shortly after, almost too soon after. Like, within a couple of months, they had announced a sequel was being made. And Human Head was going to be retained to work on the sequel. It's still a 3D Realms property at that point. And we really didn't hear anything else about that game until, I guess it was late 2000s when Bethesda actually acquired the IP. And we had seen like a cinematic trailer and that kind of thing for Prey 2, and it looked really interesting, although they had dropped the portal stuff and we had a new main character, and it seemed like the Native American stuff was gone, which is kind of a bummer for me because I really enjoyed what they had. And so this game, you know, it would come out at E3, see a couple trailers, and then really nothing after that. So kind of a curious absence of mind, and not really sure what went on behind the scenes. There was some rumors for sure about Bethesda trying to acquire Human Head through some kind of shady tactics, and that not working out. And so they, you know, basically they took the IP away from Human Head, and yeah. But I don't know how much of that is true. That's all kind of conjecture and rumor. But anyway, we flash forward through all that to today, and Arkane Studios, which I had never really heard of Arkane Studios before the Dishonored series, and they have made they've been around for a while. They've made some games. Digging through their catalog, I've heard of some of the games they've made and played some of them. But I wasn't really aware of them like I would be, you know, a BioWare or something like that. I didn't know really who they were or, you know what they had worked on or any of that stuff. So Dishonored comes out in, I believe, 2011. I can't remember. And I picked it up and I played through like the first level. I enjoyed it, what I had played, but for some reason that was a time when a lot of games were coming out. And so it fell by the wayside and I didn't get back to it. It actually took the second game coming out for me to really kind of find my legs with it. And once I found the charm in Dishonored, I've yet to shake that loose. There's something about the way that Arkane designs their games, and I discovered this first with Dishonored 2. And it's just it's a real shame to me that I didn't discover their stuff earlier. Looking back through their catalog, I see they've done Arx Fatalis, which was on the original Xbox, and then they did Dark Messiah, which was on the 360 and PC. And so they've done a lot of interesting stuff. And the one thing that stacks them above other developers, in my opinion, is level design. The way that they create verticality and space in the levels that they create. And not just that, but they give you the tools to make it as creative as you want. You have a lot of different ways to play. All the levels, and I use that in quotes because the levels are really worlds. I would describe it as a living, breathing world. Everything feels lived in. And I'm not a game designer, but I imagine that's a very tough thing to convey, is the occupation of space. Because if I look around at my home right now, it looks lived in, mostly because it's a disgusting mess, but you can tell that someone lives here, that a family lives here, or a person lives here. And that's the thing about Arkane games that I take home with me, is that I'm walking around a space, I've got multitudes of options to deal with the objective at hand. There's space both vertically, horizontally, the level design is superb, and I can really tackle it any way I want to, and it's not just that, the game part of it, which is fantastic, but I'm walking around in a place that feels like it belongs. The world makes sense. And Dishonored does a fantastic job of that. Prey does as well. And it just has that, like I said, that lived in, it's soaked in it. You just can feel it everywhere that you go. You know, you can tell that real things happened here, and it just immerses you. That's the kind of thing for me. If a game can immerse me like that, I'm sold. Even if the gameplay systems aren't quite up to par, if the world feels unique and immersion is there, then I can make it through, and that's a game I'll remember. And Arkane does that better than anybody else on Earth, in my opinion. And I'm sad that I didn't find their games, you know, until recently. That being said, once I ran through Dishonored 2 the first time, I went back and picked up Dishonored Definitive Edition on the Xbox One, played through it, and was just kind of mad at myself. Like, how the hell did I skip out on this game? And so you flash forward. By the time I had finished Dishonored 1 and Dishonored 2, and I 100%ed both of them, and if you have not tried a stealth playthrough of Dishonored where you don't kill anybody and you're not seen, you're missing out. That is some just masterclass game design that I really feel like everybody should go for that at least once. It's truly unique. So when I finished Dishonored 2 for the second time to get all the achievements, you know, I went back to Prey. And again, it's one of those things where I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't pay $60 for this game. I picked it up on sale, on Xbox Live sale, for $20, which is, you know, criminal. I mean, absolutely criminal that game could cost $20. Because again, Prey shares a lot of the similarities of the Dishonored series. Unique art style. Everything has a lived-in feeling. You're walking around Talos 1, which is the space station that you inhabit, and everything feels like people have been there. Things have happened. Although you know a little bit about the outbreak of the Typhon organism, you don't need to be told that. And that's Prey's greatest strength, is it doesn't beat you over the head with exposition. It doesn't tell you, hey, Patrick, this is exactly what's happening in this game. This is objective A, B, and C, and go do these things. You discover the story in Prey. You discover the themes in Prey. Talking earlier a little bit about immersion and a lived-in world. You know, an example of that is, you know, in Prey, you'll come across, this is, for instance, this is just one scene, a pool table in a room. And littered around the pool table are a multitude of objects that show that real people were here, not just here, but living in the world. And it was basically a play on Dungeons and Dragons, where each person had their character sheet. And these people were gathered around the table, and you could tell that they had been here, they were playing a game together, there were comments, there were audio recordings that described what they were doing, when they were doing it, why they were doing it. They had their character names. It's really well designed, well developed, well executed way to tell a story inside the world that makes it feel like, you know, real people lived here. The setting of this game is really unique. So basically they took the 2006 version of Prey and completely threw it and all of its sequel ideas completely out the window, for better or worse. You know, long story short, I really don't know why this game is called Prey. I think it's kind of a disservice to the original game and the new game. So it's a disservice both to the Prey IP and to Arkane Studios, in my opinion, that the game is called Prey, because it's absolutely stands on its own. It doesn't need anything from Prey, and Prey had been, you know, hasn't had a release in the series since 2006. I mean, I hesitate to even call it a series. It's one game, basically, with another that was developed and canceled. So there's really no legacy, culture around Prey, other than it was an interesting game with some good concepts, and it, you know, was well executed, but nothing that would require bringing it out again for a reimagining. And I think that's probably just a symptom of a risk adverse industry around new IP, and I'm sure Bethesda had their research behind why they did that, but I think that it was kind of a disservice here. Because the game is absolutely fantastic and deserved, its own legacy, in my opinion. But it is what it is, and it is a fantastic game. And they do say this is a reimagining of Prey, so they don't pretend like this is a continuation of the story. And thank God, because it has nothing to do with Native Americans or anything like that. And this game is set aboard a space station called Talos 1. And it's a really unique place. It's a space station, and it is stunningly beautiful at the design. In some of the zero-G sections later on in the game, you actually go outside the space station. And just if you fly around the exterior of the space station, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's just expertly crafted, how all the airlocks intertwine into the living space, and then a singular place called the Guts runs through the entire system, providing water and air and things like that to all the livable sections. And it's very, very unique. Design floating around outside, and you see the Transtar logo, which is the name of the corporation that employs you. You being Dr. Morgan Yu, who's one of the co-heads of the Transtar Talos 1 project. the other being your brother, Alex Morgan. And in this game, you can be a man or a woman. So you're either, you know, Alex's brother or sister. Doesn't really matter outside of some, you know, some different voice actor, obviously, for Morgan being the female or the male. But yeah, that it's also implied too that the relationship has broken down a little bit between Morgan and Alex. And part of that is the reasoning, is the reason behind the Talos One project, which is to study the Typhon organism, which was discovered, and they are trying to research it and, you know, to an extent weaponize it or, you know, provide other uses. But like anything else, eventually the research turns to weaponization. And to access the abilities given by the Typhon, you install a device called a Neuromod. And so the game starts out, you're in your apartment, you're going to your first day of work. It sounds like the setup is that, you know, Alex has convinced you to come work on the Talos One project, and here you come. You guys are both doctors. I'm not sure, you know, what kind of doctor you are, but you've agreed to come work aboard the space station, and it's like your first day of work. And it's really interesting way to start the game, in that, you know, you ride a helicopter to your, what would be your office building. And I love how they do the credits in this game, where like Arkane Studios is plastered across the Golden Gate Bridge, for instance. It's embedded in the bridge, and it's just really, really, really unique and a really cool way to do the credits. But you instantly know something's up. You're going through these tests, and you see the Typhon organism actually kill one of the scientists while you're doing your initial test before your, you know, first day of work. And then you wake up in your apartment again. And so this is kind of, you black out, wake up in your apartment, and this is kind of the crux of the game, is that you've been running through a Groundhog's Day simulator, basically, where, and it's explained to you in greater detail later on. You know, and I kind of skim over it because really, you don't play Prey and Dishonored for the story. I mean, they're serviceable and they work, and there's a cool twist at the end here that kind of sets up future games, hopefully. But the main story in this game is not nearly as important as the station itself. And the game, the guts of the game, is you exploring the space station. The story is there. It's in your mind. You're trying to determine what happened. You're either going to blow up the station and destroy all the research and the Typhon, or you're going to try to somehow nullify the Typhon organisms and save all the research that you've done. And so the choices there doesn't really mean too much, honestly. And, you know, I won't spoil everything about the game, but there are some definitely simulation-type events that really kind of make those choices not meaningless, but, you know, not super important. And so the game, the crux of this game and the draw of this game is you exploring the space station. And it's the way that you explore the space station, the side quests that you uncover, the transcribes, the audio logs, all these things make this world feel like it was lived in, like I've said before, but it keeps you going. And the side quests are so well written in this game. Honestly, the game could not have an ending, and I would be fine. I'd be okay with that. And so, it's about finding the space around you that has been occupied, and how you deal with that, and how you interact with the surviving crew members. And it just is, the way that it weaves these stories in and out, the side quest design is phenomenal, and the branching paths and narratives are all just really well done. Kind of evokes a little bit of The Witcher here, and that there's multiple branches of side quest. And really, that's what kept me coming back, was these characters, their transcribes, the audio logs, finding out the places that these people had in this world, the jobs that they had, the duties that they were assigned, and how they went about their lives. That is what kept me coming back. You know, in the end, I've decided to both blow up the station and save the station. You know, I've got multiple playthroughs of this, of course, and you know, like I said before, it really, because of the simulation nature of this game, and there's a bonus credit scene that I won't spoil, but that hopefully sets up a future Prey game. You know, and again, this game is about traversing this space station, and they have absolutely knocked it out of the park when it comes to that. I don't have a ton of gripes about this game. You know, there's some technical stuff. I've honestly never had a game crash on me as much as Prey has. And that's a testament to how amazing it is, because normally a game crashed on me this much, I'd throw it in the garbage. But I would just, you know, load it back up and keep going. But, you know, there's some technical issues here and there. But, you know, most everything in here is superb, is well done, from the music to the graphics to the art style to voice acting and story and narrative, and especially around the side quests and the side story. And I really implore you, if you haven't played, you know, any of Prey, to really to get in there and discover all the secrets that Talos One has to offer. In closing, I just, you know, want to reiterate again that the design in this game is top notch, and if that's what you look for in a game, then Arkane Studios needs to be on your radar. They weren't on mine as of, you know, a year ago, and I'm so glad that I found them. They kind of have, you know, rejuvenated my love of games to an extent. I'd kind of, you know, fallen out a little bit, quite honestly, and finding these games and discovering that these types of games do exist. And, you know, they classify it as an immersive sim. I don't really, you know, immersion is the key word there, and absolutely they nailed that. I never played any of the System Shock games. I wish I had, but I haven't. And they call this a spiritual successor to System Shock, to the System Shock series, which I'd love to go back and play if it's anything like these. It's tough for me to go back and play older games sometimes. Just, you know, they age poorly, and it's kind of hard to stare at a game from the late 90s or early 2000s. Early 3D is a bit of a mess to go back to. There was some talk of them rebooting System Shock, and I hope they do that. But until they do that, this will be my frame of reference for that series. So, you know, in conclusion, man, just, this is an unbelievable experience. Prey, and not just Prey, but anything that Arkane touches from now on will be an instant day one purchase for me. I'm kind of ashamed of myself for not having picked up their stuff before, and you know, I might mail them the extra $40 for Prey, because that game deserves every bit of the $60 that they were charging at launch for it. I'm probably 80, 85 hours in across multiple playthroughs, and I have two achievements left to go that I'm going to hunt down at some point. I have to do another playthrough to get the last two achievements, Eye and It and Awkward Ride Home, which are both, you know, kind of devious achievements. You have to kill all the surviving members of the crew, and I don't like playing that way, but I definitely want to get all the achievements. I'm a little bit of an achievement hunter. So, you know, in conclusion, if you have access, pick up Prey. Play Prey. If you can, go back to the 2006 version. It's a little bit rough. You know, like I said, it's early, you know, mid-2000s. So it's the early days of the 360. But it still stands up, and it's still a good experience. But that's it for episode 101 of Game Journal. Thanks for your time. See you next time.